All rise. The judges of the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, hear ye, hear ye. All persons and judges of the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, draw near. For the court is now in session. God save the United States and its honorable court.
Please take your seats. Good morning. We're here to hear the oral argument in the case of the United States versus Ever First Act Mac. Gentlemen, are both sides ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize.
Do I understand you want the government would like 7 minutes in the reserve?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Judge Orr, Senior Judge Orr, honorable members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Major Charles Warren, and along with Mr. Roger Bruce, we have the honor of representing the United States government in this Article 62 appeal. Your Honor, corroboration requires a scintilla of evidence, not a mountain of evidence, and the military judge abused his discretion and misapplied the law in excluding the appellant's confession to possessing and viewing child pornography where, one, he ignored modus operandi evidence, that is, the method of the download, identical search terms to corroborate the appellee's confession and the media recovered, two, ignored unallocated space images where he discounted the child pornography images recovered from the unallocated space of appellee's MacBook computer to corroborate appellee's confession to possessing child pornography files. And three, where he disallowed permissible evidence of consciousness of guilt and the non-testimonial actions of appellee as proper corroboration of his confession when the appellee expressed shock and surprise at not finding the external hard drive where he said where he thought that it would reside. Now, Your Honors, in evaluating the military judge's ruling in this case, the government would focus on this simple premise. Actions speak louder than words. And while the military judge encanted the appropriate corroboration standard, that is, a slight to very slight quantum of evidence to corroborate the essential facts of the confession, such as to give it an inference of truth, he misapplied that standard as applied to the appellee's confessions in this case. Your Honors, the purpose of the corroboration standard is simple, to prevent coerced or false confessions. And our Superior Court and Yeoman expressed that in 1987. And that's why the standard is so slight, because the purpose here is not to make confessions redundant to the evidence required at trial. The purpose is to make sure there's enough facts to give an overall reliability of truth to the confession, and to make sure that this hasn't been coerced out of the appellant, or appellee in this case, or that he's making things up and it's just false. This is well-worn territory for this court, Your Honors. This court has dealt with this issue of corroboration multiple times in Article 62 appeals, including United States v. Baldwin, as cited in the brief, and more recently, in United States v. Burkhart, a 2010 decision by this court, where the court discussing the quantum of evidence necessary for corroboration said, and I quote, "The quantum of evidence needed to fulfill the corroboration requirement is very slight, and the corroboration is sufficient if it merely fortifies the truth of the confession without independently establishing the crime charged." And that's Burkhart at 3. This slight, the very slight standard has been affirmed by our Court of Appeals in Yeoman, 1987, in Melvin, 1988, in Mayo, 1992, and more recently in Grant in 2002, where the language used was very slight evidence, sufficient only, again, to give that inference of truth, not establish every element under the case, because that is the corpus delicti standard that was rejected by the Supreme Court in Smith. The reliability of the essential facts also need not be proved beyond a reasonable doubt or preponderance of the evidence. And that the court held in Baldwin, 2001, from our Superior Court CAF. So in this case, where did the military judge err? Having the standard set forth as follows. He erred when he conflated and confused factual sufficiency for the whole charge defense versus the corroboration requirement. And here's what I mean, Your Honors. Appellate Exhibit 19, paragraph 41, the judge's ruling on recon. quote, "The court finds that the essential facts from the accused statement given to AFOSI, which require corroboration, are that he possessed images of child pornography of an external hard drive while on active duty at Goodfellow Air Force Base." Your Honors, that is not the standard. That is the standard for the government to convict and have factual sufficiency beyond a reasonable doubt to convict the appellee at trial. The standard for corroboration is slight to very slight information to provide an overall inference of truth for his statement. And we know this from looking at what the military judge wanted was corroboration on each element. He said he didn't, but his words here demonstrate that he did. And we know that's not the standard. Caff again and Arnold in 2004 saying that the corroboration need not confirm each element of the offense. And that's Arnold at 256 to 257. And Mayo in 1992, not every element of the charge need be corroborated with independent evidence to corroborate the confession. But here, the only evidence the military judge wanted to listen to for corroboration was where is the external hard drive. And that is evidence of the corpus delicti, and that is certainly evidence that the government would like to have to prove guilt of the offense at trial. But that is not evidence that's necessary to corroborate the confession.
Counsel, let me ask you, so you're saying it's not necessary to have any evidence that this hard drive ever actually existed over the period of time of which the Air Force has jurisdiction of the offense?
Your Honor, we're saying that that specifically, no, we do not have to recover the physical hard drive. We believe there is circumstantial evidence to show that the hard drive
exists. Not that you have to recover the physical hard drive. You have evidence that a hard drive existed prior to jurisdiction attaching over this airman, prior to him enlisting in the Air Force. Don't you need to have evidence that the hard drive existed at some point in time during which the Air Force had jurisdiction over him?
No, Your Honor. We need to have evidence that corroborates the essential facts of the confession and the issue of whether that hard drive existed in order to admit the confession at trial. Then defense is free to argue that the government, notwithstanding that confession, as a matter of factual sufficiency on the merits, that the government hasn't recovered and presented you this hard drive, so the government hasn't carried its factual burden to demonstrate that the accused is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. But for purposes of the corroboration of the confession, we have to take a step back. And here we're permitted to use circumstantial evidence, sufficient only to raise an inference of truth to the matters confessed to. So we do not have to produce the external hard drive to corroborate the confession. What we have to have is a slight to very slight quantum of evidence to show an inference of truth that that confession could be possible. And we can rely on circumstantial evidence to do that, Your Honor. And in this case, we would point the court to these facts. As to the possession of the external hard, as to the possession of the child porn, here's what we have. We have a linkage between the media used, the accused said he used, and the media recovered. He said he used a MacBook, we recovered a MacBook. We have a linkage between the method of download the accused said he used and the method of download discovered in the DCFL report. That's Appellate Exhibit 7, Attachment 3, at page 17. The method of download the accused said he used, he said he hooked in an external hard drive to the MacBook and downloaded images. The DCFL report shows that he hooked in an external hard drive to the MacBook and downloaded images. And not just that he downloaded images, but that there was a partition on the external hard drive between Sarah, his wife's name, and Jacob, the accused wife's name, and he downloaded the images to the Jacob side. And then the DCFL report further shows the listing of images that were downloaded to the Jacob side, and they each contain sexually explicit information in the file names. Also, we have the images actually recovered. The accused confessed to possessing child porn that he downloaded onto the external hard drive. And to corroborate that there was actual images available for download, we have the unallocated space images on the MacBook. And unallocated space images, this court held in Merritt in 2012, are permissible evidence to satisfy legal sufficiency for possession of child porn. So in this circumstance, we've got the media linking up. We've got the method of download linking up, and we've got the images recovered linking up. The only thing that we don't have is the corpus delicti. That's a matter for factual sufficiency at trial, but not a matter that eliminates corroboration at the slight to very slight standard required by the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces in order to corroborate this confession, Your Honor. Now, furthermore, with regards to the viewing of the child pornography in this case, we also, the government will provide a tit-for-tat corroboration as to what the accused confessed to. The accused confessed to viewing child pornography approximately every other week since his entry onto active duty and doing so on his Dell Inspiron computer and then deleting the search history, not downloading the images, but deleting images in the search history as he went through. So what do we have again? Media used. The accused said he used a Dell Inspiron computer. We recovered a Dell Inspiron computer. Method of search. The accused said that he used sexually explicit search terms, including terms cum shoots everywhere and cum shots. Those were recovered in the partially deleted search history. We also have the accused saying that he deleted the search history, which explains why we didn't find more. And indeed, the DCFL report found that a partially deleted internet search history, and that deletion of information here actually serves to corroborate the confession. The absence of evidence here actually corroborates the confession, and this is not a foreign concept to this court. In United States versus Mitchell, another decision by this court in 1989, the court favorably ruled upon the government's assertion that too strict a corroboration standard would be self-defeating and permit culprits to escape if they can only manage to destroy the paperwork suggesting their scheme. And that's Mitchell, 29 MJ at 855. The absence of... Yes, Your Honor.
Should we be concerned that none of the terms relate to child pornography?
Sir, respectfully, no. That's a red herring here. What we have, similar to Merritt, we recovered, first because the accused said he deleted or attempted to delete much of his search history, and that's why we only recovered parts of it. And those terms that we recovered don't on their face display a child pornography search term, but that again is not the point. The point is, do we have an inference of truth to give the overall reliability of the confession? And similar to this court's decision, United States versus Merritt in 2012, where the court found that adult pornography search terms serve to corroborate the accused confession to possession of child pornography, that same analysis applies here. In the light least favorable to the government, these search terms are at least sexually explicit and link up with the search terms, some of the search terms that the accused said that he used. When we have the accused saying that he used a list of search terms, including some that don't explicitly reference child pornography, that lends an inference of truth that he did exactly what he said he did. He searched for sexually explicit images, he deleted most of his tracks, and the remnants of what lays behind match with what he says he did. And those remnants are admissible under Merritt and should be relied upon to this court using this court's decision in Mitchell, because to rule otherwise would permit the accused to profit from the corroboration rule when he intentionally deleted his search history. And we know that that is not a precedent that this court would want to establish. Now, furthermore, beyond these linkages in the modus operandi type evidence that the military judge dismissed out of hand here, contrary to Merritt and contrary to United States versus Baldwin, we have more. We have the, pertinent to your question, Judge Mitchell, about evidence of the external hard drive existing. We have the accused asserting, yes, it exists, and yes, I'll show you where it is. On Appellate Exhibit 18, Disc 2, from minutes 733 to 746, we've got the accused telling OSI, yeah, we'll find it. I think it's on the bookshelf. Then question, is it from OSI, is it hidden? Why'd you hide it? Answer, because my wife would find it. And again, that's Appellate Exhibit 18 at Disc 2. This is an accused asserting that this external hard drive exists right now. Right now. The evidence that we have before the court is not that it didn't exist, it's that it wasn't recovered. And the reasons it wasn't recovered, the court can read the facts below and use its common sense and knowledge of ways of the world that the wife was aware that the husband was under investigation for child porn. She was advised of this at the beginning of the day. OSI did three separate searches of the residence. And when they came for the third time, after she had advance notice the prior two times, the external hard drive was not where the accused left it. Does that mean the wife destroyed it? Hid it? We don't know. What we do know is that the accused verified that that hard drive existed and then showed shock and surprise consistent with his confession when he didn't find it in the location that he says that it was. That's so...
All the corroboration is coming from the accused.
But in this case, Your Honor, while it is the rule under 304G that another statement of the accused can't be used to corroborate a prior statement of the accused, that's true, Your Honor. This was not a statement of the accused, but actions of the accused. And actions of the accused can be used as additional corroboration. But the government's argument is that...
So you're saying that his shock and surprise wasn't a statement?
Yes, Your Honor, we are. The military judge tried to analogize these to an adoptive admission under the hearsay rules, but an adoptive admission, as the court knows, is a situation where the accused is asked a question and then his silence is presumed to be an adoptive admission if it's a circumstance under which an answer would be expected. Here there was no question. There was just the accused's sua sponte actions distributing shock and surprise when the external hard drive wasn't exactly where he told him it was going to be after confessing to it a few moments before. That authentic
was the question,
display.
Where's the hard drive?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Wasn't the question really, where is the hard drive?
Well, Your Honor, he was not asked a question when he was going to search
the
hard drive.
Oh, that's what I was there for. Where's the hard drive?
Yes, Your Honor, but the shock and surprise, the adoptive admission has to be in response to a question. This is a course of conduct that the accused is engaging in after he goes to the residence. And so the government isn't using an adoptive admission here, a statement to corroborate a statement. What the government is using is consciousness of guilt evidence, activities by the accused, to corroborate that. But again, Your Honor, we would say that is not the primary nail on which the government's argument for corroboration exists. The primary nail for corroboration is that linkage of the media use, the search terms use, the method of download, which dovetails in each situation. The consciousness of guilt is just further evidence cherry on top. The standard is slight to very slight. The military judge's rulings here disregarded that circumstantial evidence because what he wanted was the evidence of the corpus delicti and the corpus delicti only. We'll cite the court to the military judge's rulings at record of 98.
Counsel, let me ask you. So it sounds like part of your argument is if anybody confesses to viewing child pornography on their computer, the only essential facts that the government would need to show is that they had a computer that they had once used to use a search engine to search for some sexually suggestive term. Is that what it boils down to?
No, Your Honor, although that evidence is certainly useful
That's the three points that you're pointing out for the viewing, right? That's the media used, they used a computer, they used search terms that were sexually suggestive, and he deleted the search history.
But here we have, Your Honor, those facts are completely consistent with the modus operandi that the accused used in this case to obtain this information. We don't have a situation where that's far removed from searching for explicit stuff. We're not saying, oh, well, the accused said he was at Goodfellow Air Force Base when he looked for this, and look, he's stationed at Goodfellow Air Force Base. We are not that far removed. The government admits that not every article of truth in a confession can be used, and we just rest upon our laurels right there that the accused's name is, in fact, Jacob McIntyre, and the accused is, in fact, an airman first class, and the accused is, in fact, stationed at Goodfellow. That's not what we're saying, Your Honor. But here, when the accused said, I searched for child porn on Adele. I did so by deleting search terms. I used these specific search terms. And then we recover evidence that mirrors that, that is sufficient, particularly in a circumstance where is here. The accused purposefully deleted and attempted to erase evidence of his child porn viewing and searches. And that deletion itself was forensically identified by DCFL. Under these circumstances, this more than adequately gives an inference of truth that the accused viewed child pornography as he confessed to, because that's the standard, Your Honor. The standard is not, and the government would agree. On these facts, does the government win at trial after this confession is admitted? Maybe not, because a reasonable finder of fact might find, well, I find that you confess to looking at having child porn on a computer in 2011, but I don't see how you continue to possess that when we never found the external hard drive. A reasonable finder of fact might say that, but that's not the standard for corroboration of a confession, Your Honor. The standard is, do we have an inference of truth at a quantum of evidence that's below beyond a reasonable doubt, that's below preponderance of the evidence, the inference of truth? And if modus operandi evidence and consciousness of guilt evidence isn't good enough for corroboration, then the government would wonder why it's good enough for guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, where consciousness of guilt evidence is typically used in a 404B concept to provide additional evidence of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. If it's good enough to satisfy a standard for guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, Your Honor, we respectfully submit, and as this Court has found in Baldwin, that it's good enough to satisfy the much lower standards of corroboration established by our Superior Court. Your Honor, finally, we know that in this case the appellee largely just relies upon one case, United States versus Rounds, for the proposition that a confession can be corroborated as to some aspects and not corroborated as to others. And in that case, cocaine use was corroborated as to one event with the accused and not corroborated to another event. That case is easily distinguishable on this basis. In Rounds, there were simply no witnesses around to discuss the accused cocaine use on the second incident versus the first. Here, we have forensic witnesses in both instances. We have the computers. Yes, Your Honor. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Okay, yes, sir. Here we have forensic evidence. The witnesses are both of the computers in the DCFL report. For the viewing, we have the unallocated space images, the download to an external hard drive, and evidence from the DCFL report of a download to an external hard drive to the Jacob partition.
Yeah, but if you compare that to the Rounds case, I think you have the New Year's Day thing covered for the 2011 viewing. How does that get you into the charge time frame?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, particularly, and I want to be very clear here, the government is relying upon the unallocated space images on the MacBook
To corroborate
the possession, because those images, it shows there was a download to an external hard drive of images from the MacBook to an external hard drive in 2011, and the accused said that he continued to possess that external hard drive. So that's what we're using those unallocated space images for the possession. For the viewing, we are relying upon the accused.
You're saying that the possession is only on the hard drive that nobody can find within the charge time frame?
Yes, Your Honor, but that point goes to the factual sufficiency at trial. Can the government prove that he possessed it at trial versus can we admit this confession where he says he possessed it, which is a slight to very slight inference of truth to the overall facts of that confession?
But that sounds like the Thanksgiving event in the Rounds case.
Well, Your Honor, the difference is in the Rounds case, we didn't have anybody who saw the Thanksgiving incident. Here, we have a witness in the MacBook, unallocated space images, and the evidence of the download. So we do have a witness, Your Honor, the forensic witness here. It's different than Rounds. Rounds is relying upon personal observations because we're talking about drug use. This is forensic. This is accessing computer images and whatnot. We have forensic witnesses. In this case, demonstrating that the accused said, I downloaded images from a computer to a hard drive. It shows that he did that.
Just so I understand what you're saying, the fact that he still had the MacBook with the images in it, that's not the possession you're concerned about. You're concerned about the hard drive that may or may not have existed after the charge time frame.
Yes, Your Honor. We think that the hard drive that he says that he had the images stored on is the most direct evidence of possession. Now, there could be an argument made, and I see my time has expired, Your Honor.
Oh,
may I
briefly conclude? You're going to finish the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. Certainly, there could be an argument made that because the images still existed even in unallocated space on the MacBook, and he had the MacBook in his possession, that would constitute possession. We think the stronger argument is that the external hard drive, which contained the images in accessible form, although the accused said he had not accessed them since he came on to active duty, but contained the images in accessible form, establishes dominion and control necessary for possession. And the fact that he told us what the contents of that hard drive were, and we found evidence to corroborate child pornography images on that computer, that's the link that we need. The absence of the hard drive speaks more to, can the government prove it beyond a reasonable doubt at trial? The absence of the hard drive should not prevent corroboration here because the standard is slight evidence for an overall inference of truth to the confession. Your Honor, I appreciate the latitude to finish the question, and we'll speak more on the book.
All right. Senior Judge Orr, members of this honorable court, I'm Captain Jeff Davis, along with Lieutenant Colonel Patrick Wells. We represent the appellee, Aaron First Class McIntyre. Before I even get started, Your Honors, I want to be clear about something, and maybe it was just a matter of semantics. There were no DCFL witnesses in this case, unlike in Merritt. The term witness was used numerous times during the argument. In this case, based on my memory of reading the record of trial, there in fact were no witness testimony, which goes to the judge's findings of fact and the weight of the evidence. The government entered into evidence the DCFL reports that were produced. And in his ruling, the military judge said he accepted those as findings of fact. But those were extremely vague. And the judge gave the government the opportunity to call their DCFO expert and even asked if they were there and if they needed to delay to get them. And the government didn't take up that opportunity. So, in fact, there was no witness testimony regarding DCFL based on my memory of reading the record of trial. Military Rule of Evidence 304G states that in order for the government to admit a confession, they must introduce evidence of the essential facts to corroborate that confession. Further, 304G states that the military judge alone shall determine when adequate evidence has been admitted. In this case, the military judge did not abuse his discretion when he found, even after reconsideration, that he offered the government to offer further evidence, to offer further case law that they found, and gave further argumentation, did not abuse his discretion when he found that evidence did not corroborate the essential facts of the confession. The standard this court uses to determine abuse of discretion, according to CAF, is not merely a difference of opinion, putting yourself in the military judge's shoes at trial. The standard is that the military judge's rule is either arbitrary, fanciful, clearly unreasonable, or clearly erroneous. And that was not the case here. We have two different, well, let me start first here. The government, and extensively in their brief, and then here today, starts off with the policy proposition that 304G exists for the purposes of we don't want to convict people on false or coerced confessions, and that's why we have the rule. And the position seems to be, there's clearly absolutely no concern whatsoever with the confession here. That's the underlying policy. Therefore, we're sort of done. And I don't think it's that simple at all. I would first submit that I don't think, although that's clearly what the rule states, is the policy. There's no case law that says, as an initial matter, the military judge must find that he calls into question, the confession, and he can't believe it because he feels coerced. There's no case law that says that's an initial requirement. But that's the purpose of the rule. But you have to think about a confession to child pornography, and particularly the confession in this case. It's kind of interesting. When you look at Airman McIntyre's 1168 that he wrote, presumably after the recorded interview, I think it's in the record of trial at Appellate Exhibit 12, and it's an attachment. On two different occasions, Airman McIntyre writes out, I'm looking at Appellate Exhibit 12, and this is an attachment. It starts at page 51 and 56. This is Airman McIntyre's 1168. If you start on page 52, at two different times, he writes out a full sentence basically saying that he didn't do this. And then he lines it out and says that he did do it. So on page 52 of 56, he says at the very top, I have not looked at or downloaded any illegal pornography since I've been in the military. And then he crosses it out and initials it. And then, of course, he
gives a different statement. And then the very next page, 53 of 56, he does essentially the same thing again. And I've not done it since being in the military, and then crosses it out and initials it. So that's a pretty odd sort of
thing to do in a confession.
You know, we often see things lined out and people misstate things, but to write out a whole entire sentence saying that you didn't do something, particularly if he's writing this after his interview, and then he's sort of lining it out and saying, oh, okay, I lied when I wrote that, I did do it. So I just want to go through a list of things that could, that in fact were very reasonable to give the military judge a trial pause regarding the confession. But again, I want to be clear, I don't think as a matter of law it's a requirement that the military judge make this initial finding. But again, the government goes at length about this, so I don't want it to go unnoticed. So first you have that in and of itself, this odd 1168 where it's literally saying he didn't do it since being in the military, and it's written out in a full sentence form, and then he lines it out, initials it, and says otherwise. And then you have, in particular, his confession. So we have two different, sort of one charge, two specs, but they're sort of very different. Specification one is the possession, and that deals with that he continued to maintain possession of CP on this external hard drive. Now, distinct from that is the viewing spec, and that's specification two. And that sort of theory of guilt that the government has is that while on active duty, he continued to search for CP using a wholly different computer, not the MacBook, because it didn't work. This was a Dell laptop. And so his confession to OSI is that he was doing this on essentially a biweekly basis. He's using this Dell laptop to search the internet pretty constantly to look for child pornography. And then they seize that computer. That very computer he says he's using is seized by OSI and sent to DCFO. And I think military judges, with your knowledge and experience and ways in the world, we have a sense of sort of the powerful tools that DCFL has, and I'll come back to evidence specifically in the record of trial of that. But DCFL finds not one single solitary thing on that Dell computer that cooperates any illegal activity. Not one. And we have to ask, how is that possible? When they did the scan on this MacBook computer, this MacBook computer had not been powered up in almost 2 years, but yet they could find deleted images in unallocated space, and they knew when that computer was actually last powered up. That gives you a sense of how powerful DCFL's ability is to find out stuff on these computers. And yet, on a weekly basis, essentially, he's claiming he's downloading and viewing child pornography on the Dell, and yet we can't find anything, not one single solitary image. It's even like, judge, here's a questionable one from the Dell. Not even that. Not a search term. Not a website. That should give, and did give, the trial judge pause regarding that confession.
And then, counsel, let me ask you along those lines. Can legal activity be the corroborating evidence for a confession to illegal activity?
I think it's a possibility, but it gets concerning, and I would go to
Let's say somebody confesses that they were smoking marijuana by buying Philly blunts, and that they bought them at the 7-Eleven at a certain street, and you find the receipt for that purchase at that time, you find the empty Philly blunts but no marijuana. Would that be sufficient corroboration to a use of marijuana?
I think that's very close. I think it would be a lot better.
Why is his statements regarding that he used his Dell Inspiron laptop to conduct these search terms to go to the site X Hamster to view child pornography, why is that not sufficient as corroboration of the essential facts of his confession?
I think that's probably the primary issue. What are the essential facts that need to be corroborated? And I think when you look at the record of trial, the military judge was trying very hard with the government to sort of get on the same page as government, what do you believe the essential facts are with regard to each of these? And he did that numerous times throughout. So the essential facts of his confession is during a certain time period, he was looking at CP. I mean, that's the essential facts. I don't think that I was also looking at adult pornography is an essential fact. That's a tangential fact. It's not an essential fact of a confession. Now, if you look at merit and compare it, I think that does go in the direction the military judge is asking. Because in merit, if you say, well, I started off looking at adult pornography on certain websites, and then that led to links that I clicked on that then led me to CP, I then viewed and downloaded that CP, well, now you have a lead to a link from non-criminal activity to criminal activity, and I think that that does help considerably in tying those essential facts, because there's a connection between those two. That shows it's completely consistent with essentially everything the accused and merit confessed to. And so I would say I think you can use sort of non-criminal activity as part of cooperation, but I do think it has to have some kind of connection with the illegal activity, because it's just not, it needs to be corroborated, it's the essential facts. There has to be some element of criminality that's being corroborated, not essentially just non-criminal activity. I suppose, I suppose we could probably do, analogies all day long on these, so I don't know how helpful they are, but, one that we might consider is sort of a DUI confession. And I think this actually works pretty good as an analogy with regards to both specifications. So we might suppose there's an airman who 2 years before joining the military got a conviction for a DUI. And then while he's on active duty, he confesses to a DUI, and then there's sort of no other evidence other than his confession. And the government says, well, the evidence to corroborate his confession is his DUI from 2 years ago. That's kind of the same thing they're doing with the possession of the hard drive. 2 years ago, he looked at CP. He said he possessed it again, so he probably did. And that really doesn't seem consistent with the case law, particularly with rounds. And the other thing I would offer is, the reason I like the analogy is, when you're confessing to a DUI, you don't really know that you've met the limit for a DUI. He could just be wrong. He could have had some drinks and thought he met the .08 or whatever the limit was, but he could have been wrong, and that's why you would need some essential facts. Well, this case is very similar, and this goes back to the military judge having paused. When someone's confessing to child pornography, how do we in fact know that the person knows what child pornography was and what they were looking at? They could have done a search for new teens, and they could have went to a website that seemed like they were young, and he's like, yeah, I think I did. And then, we have all sorts of cases in where, the convictions have been overturned because either it wasn't real images, they were made up images, or they didn't meet the DOS factors. So it's not child pornography, it's child erotica.
But couldn't you use the information that's found on the MacBook to corroborate that he actually did know what child porn was? I think he gave a time frame, but that he knew what it was.
I think if the government had maybe called a DCFL expert, that certainly would have been more helpful in that direction. The problem in this case, when you talk about cooperation, I think at some level this leads into rounds. How old can the evidence be before we say, okay, look, this is a bit too stale for us to be using for cooperation? Unfortunately, one of the things difficult about this case is the facts are very, very unique. There really doesn't appear to be any case law on point that's factually similar. And the issue is he's confessing to OSI that he did this at a very young age prior to joining the military. I mean, he was saying he was very young, like 13, when he's doing this, when he starts doing it. And then at some point, he says that MacBook stopped working almost 2 years prior to his confession. And the DCFL report actually corroborates that, and it hadn't been used for 2 years. And now we're sort of reaching back in time, 2 years, maybe more, off of just a DCFL report that states, the only thing we know is the MacBook was last powered up in 2011. The images could have been downloaded in 2000, for all we know, because the DCFL report has no idea. We don't know when the images were downloaded. We don't know when the images were deleted. We don't know for a fact who did them, because the DCFL report doesn't say that, and we didn't have any DCFL testimony to corroborate that. And at some level, that's a little bit similar to rounds, and I say that because, in rounds, you had a couple of the specs where He was present at the party he said he was at, was at the location he said it was at, and all the drugs that he said he was using were readily available, and they have witnesses to corroborate all that. And as you were saying, Judge Orr, that was fine. But in the other ones, they corroborated sort of time and place that somebody had driven him to this other party in, I think, San Antonio and dropped him off. And that's where he said he was when he did the cocaine. And there was also testimony that people at the party, it says in high school, used cocaine. And so that's certainly evidence, but the court said that's not enough to corroborate. Now, the court doesn't say exactly why, but one conclusion is that's just too tangential. That's not a central fact.
So why would the information on the MacBook be tangential to whether he knew what child pornography was?
Whether or not he knows, I think now we've gotten into a slice of an issue, whether or not he knows what child pornography is goes to the overall policy issue of having pause about the confession. Now, on the one hand, with regards to the external hard drive, he could just have been wrong. Maybe, in fact, he knew what pornography was, and maybe, in fact, he downloaded and transferred to that. He could have just been wrong about the fact that he continued to possess it. We know from the DCFL report that the MacBook clearly wasn't used. And in his confession, he says, the only computer I could plug the hard drive into was the MacBook because it was only Mac compatible. So there's no evidence that the hard drive has been plugged into anything else. And so his thought in his mind is, I kept it and it's been laying around all this time. Well, how many times have every single person in this courtroom thought we did something with something and we were wrong? I know I put my wallet in the dresser drawer. I know it for a fact that I did it. Even when we're not under the pressure of an interrogation or being accused of anything. And lo and behold, the wallet's on the kitchen table. I mean, that's not crazy to think that. Moreover, somebody else could have thrown it out because we know there was a move from Colorado to Goodfellow. Well, in the process of the move, that could have gotten lost. It could have gotten thrown away. I mean, do I have evidence I can point the court to that that's what happened? No, but again, we're just talking about the underlying policy that could certainly give a military judge pause, which the court doesn't even say he has to have, but I'm bringing it up because I think the government lays a lot of their hat on this idea that we need to have no concern whatsoever about the falsity of this confession. When in fact, when you look at the record of trial, it's sort of fraught with all sorts of reasons, starting, very, very beginning with 1168. Now, I want to talk about some language from the Mayo case. Get a citation for that. It's 34 MJ215. It's an older case, Court of Military Appeals, 1992. Now, the reason I bring that up and that I would point the court to take a closer look at that is the language that's being used with regards to the essential facts and what that really means and what it stands for. And I would submit to this court that at least with respect to the specification regarding the external hard drive, there's no case law that's been cited that I've reviewed that stands for the proposition that you can just grab sort of random facts and circumstances from any period of time to corroborate a confession. The evidence that's being introduced in all of these cases that have been cited to corroborate a confession is evidence surrounding the time period which the accused is pleading guilty to. In Mayo, they specifically say that a number of times. I'm just going to grab it so that I can point out the court. I'm looking for a star site here, so it looks like it would probably begin on page 218. And this is kind of in their analysis. Now, in this case, they're saying It is cooperated. It's not a problem. But with regard to almost every charge, they're saying during the time period covered, this evidence from the time period covered corroborates. First, proof of appellant's deliberate consumption of a substance which he thought was methamphetamine. Here there was an undercover agent who was giving him not meth, but told him it was meth. On two occasions, within the specific time period covered in his confession. Second, evidence of his earlier admission to the undercover agent confirmed the times and venues of his confession. Third, proof of the Sergeant Bernard's observations of Spencer and the latter's demonstrated capacity to produce drugs from him during the time period covered in his confession. And I would submit to the court that when you start reviewing all these cases on cooperation, you're not going to find any case that stands for the proposition that you can take evidence from arguably 2 years or more to corroborate something in a narrow time frame. And even more of an issue for this court to consider is, can you even do that for evidence that's not while he was on active duty? You're taking evidence not associated with while he was on active duty that's at a minimum 2 years old, if not more like 5 years old, to corroborate a confession that he continued to possess it. And there's simply no case that stands for that proposition. There just isn't any out there. And again, this goes back to, it's an Article 62 appeal. A military judge should be able to rely on the plain letter law of the cases he has before them. And there's no case the government can cite that says you can go back 2 years and look at something that wasn't even associated with active duty just because there's some connection. There's no case that stands for that point. And again, it clearly goes back to the essential facts. And the essential facts in this case is not that he did something in the past. The essential facts are he continued to possess it. The government could have brought in a witness who said, I was at his house, and when I was at his house, I saw an external hard drive. That might have been enough. That would be relevant to the essential facts. He would always talk about an external hard drive that he had. That would be something related to he continued to possess it. In this case, we simply just have almost no evidence at all that goes to the essential facts of what's been charged. If the government was charging the images from unallocated space, you probably might have cooperation. That's a different confession. That's a different charge. There's no evidence even that those images in unallocated space have been transferred to the hard drive, let alone that they were even the ones being charged. And when you look at, the other case, Baldwin, that the government's relying on, and again, just to go back to Merritt actually had a connection between the non-criminal activity and the criminal activity. I don't think we could say if the only thing we had as corroborating evidence in Merritt was he looked at anime and Asian porn, and the DCFR report showed he looked at anime and Asian porn. Oh, but by the way, we never found the hard drive, and we didn't find any CP like we have in this case. That is a wholly factually different case that completely takes it out of the setting. And again, the same is true of Baldwin. But really, I don't know that we even need to get into the deep detail and facts of those. The military judge's finding of fact was the interactions that took place at Appelli's house regarding go find a hard drive. Based on the military judge's review of the evidence, he found that those nonverbal cues were statements that were part and parcel of his confession. He had been interrogated by OSI in a rights advisement for about 3.5 hours. OSI had always already gone to his house twice while he was still continuing to be detained the whole entire time. He never left. And then OSI said, we need you to come to the house with us and help us find this because we can't. And then they escorted him to the house. This happens. There's no dispute about what the government says happened. But the military judge's finding is that, based on the evidence he received, was that's part and parcel of his confession. He's still in the control and custody of OSI. And I can't use an uncooperated confession to corroborate an uncooperated confession. The military judge is pretty clear about that. In Baldwin, all these nonverbal actions happened before the accused had gotten to OSI before he was being interrogated. These were just actions that he engaged in prior to anything related to an interrogation. So again, it's dramatically factually distinguishable in the two cases. And that's why Appellee's position is the government's asking this court to extraordinarily extend the holdings in Merritt and Baldwin way beyond just a plain reading of those two cases, because the cases are so factually different that you have to do that.
So it's your position that the possession of the MacBook or his holding onto the MacBook does not constitute possession?
Not the essential facts. If the government had charged the images on the MacBook, I would say yes. Appellee wouldn't have a problem with that. But that's not what the government charged. Their essential facts of the confession is that he continued to possess images of CP on the external hard drive. And that's a wholly different charge, and that's a wholly different set of essential facts. If they could have charged the images in unallocated space, now I think the case looks a whole lot more like Merritt, and you would be a lot more closer to the holding of Merritt. But of course, the government couldn't do that because, you know, he wasn't on active duty during that time.
But he still had the book.
He did.
While he was on active duty.
I agree. I don't dispute that, Judge Orr. And again, the military judge in the record of trial was very clear with counsel. Counsel, I want you, this is trial counsel, explain to me what you think you need to cooperate. What is your theory of guilt here? And he did that numerous times on the record of trial because, and the reason for that is what establishes the essential facts that must be corroborated. And the government said, our theory of guilt is he continued to possess these on an external hard drive while he was on active duty. So it's sort of wholly different. It's way different than Merritt. And what the essential facts are that need to be corroborated is significantly different. If there's no further questions, can I briefly summarize?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. The standard of review is whether the military judge abused his discretion. What that means is that his decision was arbitrary, fanciful, clearly unreasonable, clearly erroneous. That is not the case here. The military judge looked at every piece of case law the government asked. He granted them reconsideration. He considered both Merritt and Baldwin. He read them for the plain reading that they stand for. None of his facts were clearly erroneous. And accordingly, he did not abuse his discretion. Thank you.
Did you want?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, appellate defense counsel just gave an outstanding argument. The problem is it was a findings argument, not a corroboration argument. The argument of, we can't prove when he downloaded X, or we can't prove when he looked at Y, that's a factual sufficiency argument. The issue before this court, as was the issue before the military judge, is there an inference of truth established by evidence slight or very slight to corroborate this confession? Not whether this confession will win the government's case. The question is, do we have evidence, slight or very slight, to corroborate the confession? Appellant defense counsel's arguments are that the confession doesn't establish guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Maybe not. That's not the point. The point is, do we have evidence to corroborate this confession? Now, first off, Judge Mitchell, I thought you made an outstanding point, Your Honor. Legal activity can corroborate illegal activity. That's exactly the case, and it must be the case, because we know from Arnold and from Mayo, specifically, the corpus delicti rule is dead. The government does not need to provide evidence to corroborate every element of an offense, and indeed, aspects beyond the charge elements of offense are admissible corroboration, and we know that from this court's decision in Merits when adult porn search terms conducted in conjunction with child porn searches corroborated the reliability of the confession, and that's the exact same case that we have here. And quoting from Merritt at 703 to 704, the forensic analysis of the hard drive indicated that the user had searched for adult pornography with files containing Asian-sounding names and anime porn, which is associated with Asian culture. This description comports with the appellant's statement that he was looking for adult pornography of an Asian nature. The analyst's conclusion that the user had followed links or pop-ups for adult sites to other types of sites containing terminology indicating child porn was consistent with the appellant's admission that he followed links and pop-up ads that eventually led to pictures of child pornography. Ms. Peden's statement that she recovered 17 pictures from the unallocated space on the hard drive indicating they'd been previously deleted was in agreement with the appellant's admission. We have the same...
Draw that connection to this case.
Yes, sir. We have the same... While it's true that in Merritt we had the additional unallocated space images directly in closer proximity to the search term images, here we have the same type of scenario, which is the search for adult for pornography terms that and child pornography in the same proximity. The difference is, unlike Merritt, here the accused, and have to have a factual dispute with the appellate defense counsel on this, accused never said that he downloaded the images of child pornography after he joined the military service. He said he viewed them and then deleted them. That's what distinguishes this case from Merritt. That's why we don't have unallocated space things here. The accused successfully deleted that evidence, and Mitchell says that deletion of evidence doesn't get you off the hook for corroboration. That deletion of evidence yields to a circumstance where you could escape the corroboration requirement. When you have corroboration of deletion of evidence, that itself is corroboration. And so that's why Merritt applies, Your Honor, because the only factual distinction between this case and Merritt is the deletion of evidence, and Mitchell says that's still corroborated. Now, furthermore, Your Honor, the appellate defense counsel was focusing on, or what are the essential facts, that none of these were essential facts. Your Honor, what could be more essential than the method used, the media used, the search methods used, and the search results recovered? If those aren't essential, what is? Appellant would have one thing and one thing only essential. Where's the hard drive? That is not the standard. Modus operandi are essential facts, and that's been cited by this court again in Merritt. And also, the court has said in Arnold that essential facts are not limited to the elements of the crime alone. There are surrounding circumstances that are pertinent. And this court found the same thing in Baldwin. And this is Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, 2001, 54 MJ, 51 at 556. Quote, because consciousness of guilt can be used as circumstantial evidence of guilt, we find it may also be used in evaluating whether a confession meets the test for corroboration under the rule. It is not as limited as appellant would have it. It is not limited to where's the hard drive. And it's not limited to whether the government will win its case on the merits. That's not the standard. Appellant falls into the same confusion that the military judge did, conflating factual sufficiency at trial with corroboration of the confession. The government need not prove that that confession will give us proof beyond a reasonable doubt to convict at trial. All we need prove is that there's an inference of truth, an inference of truth from slight or very slight evidence, and that inference is drawn from the essential facts in this case, and that is the media used was the same. The search methods used were the same. The search results recovered comported with the appellant's assertions both to child porn that he saw on his MacBook and child porn that he deleted on his Dell. Appellee makes an argument that tries to posit, well, this confession is false. Because the accused may be mistaken in some aspects, this confession is false. Let the government be clear. There is no evidence on the record of falsity of this confession. None. The accused never took a stand and said that this confession was false or coerced. He's not required to, but there's flatly no evidence that that's the case. And appellee's counsel never said in motions practice or before the trial court below that this information was inaccurate. He based his arguments on mechanical application of the corroboration requirement. So let's be very clear. While appellee tried to muddy the waters and say, oh, this might be false, there's no evidence of falsity of this confession. The lineouts are explained on Disc 2 of Appellate Exhibit 18, where OSI goes through the appellee's confession with him, and this court can review that and see there's no confusion here. That's a clarification.
Counsel, let me ask you about the standard of review.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's abuse of discretion.
Yes, Your Honor.
Let's say that we were to decide that it was permissible for the military judge to find corroboration under merit. Is it still an abuse of discretion for the military judge to have used his discretion to say, based on my determination, I find that there's not sufficient corroboration?
Your Honor, I assume my time has expired. May I briefly answer your question? Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the answer is that abuse of discretion is bifurcated. It's clearly erroneous for findings of fact, but de novo on the law. So if this court finds an improper application of facts to law, that is reviewed on a de novo standard. And that is what CAF said in United States versus Cossio, 2007. So if the military judge, as is the case, could have used merit to find corroboration evidence and failed to do so, that is a misapplication of the law. That is not a finding of fact. That's a misapplication of the law. That's reviewed de novo, and that should be reversed by this honorable court. If there are no further questions, may I briefly conclude?
Sure.
Your Honor, in this case, the military judge abused his discretion in misapplying facts of the law for a corroboration where the evidence was more than slight or very slight. The corroboration confirmed all the essential facts, including the media used, the search methods used, and the search results, and the method of search. For these reasons, this honorable court should reverse the military judge's ruling, reinstate the oral and written confessions, and return this case to trial at its earliest opportunity. Thank you, Your Honor.
And just before you sit down, I just want to make sure I understood you. You said he misapplied the facts to the law?
Yes, sir. He misapplied, and the application of facts to the law is a legal determination, Your Honor. The factual determinations are XYZ happened. That's reviewed for clearly erroneous.
Now, are you challenging that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
No, Your Honor.
All right, that's all I want to know.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, I'd like to thank counsel for their arguments. We found them to be very helpful. There being no further business before this court is adjourned, and we will render a decision in due course.
All right.